Good evening and warm welcome. Thank you again to the Samsons for sponsoring. The debate regarding abortion has been front and center in our national conversation for decades. In the primaries today, I read the headline that some North Carolina voters cite abortion, education, democracy, and immigration as key issues. And so the first issue mentioned is abortion. The Supreme Court of Alabama issued a ruling a week or two ago that embryos are considered people, drawing from Christian beliefs that a human being receives their soul at conception. And this decision, as you see in source number one, could have significant effect on fertility treatments and associated freedoms. And as it says in the article here, the destruction of frozen embryos could expose a person to civil damages. In the last few days, the state legislature of Alabama issued decisions and legislation to protect IVF providers, and so those clinics have started to operate once again. On June 24, 2022, in Dobbs versus Jackson, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned 50 years of precedent, overruling Roe versus Wade, and eliminated the constitutional right to abortion. That represented a watershed moment in U.S. legal history and opened the door to bans and limitations in some states. And so as we navigate the culture wars, I thought this evening we should explore the Jewish view of abortion and what we think about the separation between church and state. Now, advocates of pro-choice say that a woman has the right to choose. After all, she's the one who controls her body, and the fetus is part of her body. And so any decision about terminating the pregnancy should be up to the mother. Advocates of pro-life argue that there's no rational basis to distinguish significantly between a newborn baby and a fetus. Each one possesses humanity. The baby is alive, and the fetus, at the very least, has the potential for life. What's the Jewish view? So I think it's important to understand that Judaism cannot be neatly described as pro-life or pro-choice, strictly speaking, because our tradition is not consistent with the strictly pro-life camp, because abortion is halachically permitted in certain situations. It's painful, it's tragic, it's difficult, but there are certain situations where abortion is permitted. And so it's hard to define Judaism and our tradition as strictly pro-life. On the other hand, halacha is certainly not aligned with the pro-choice movement, because our tradition teaches us that our bodies is not ours to do what we wish. And generally speaking, terminating a pregnancy is the wrong thing and is prohibited. One very important source, you see it in source number four, is the psukim from Sefer Shemot, from Parshat Mishpatim, which discusses two people who are fighting with one another, and they're literally trying to kill one another. And they accidentally strike a pregnant woman. And the pasuk addresses two different situations. The first one is v'lo ya'ason, if there's no death and no fatality, so then there are monetary damages against the person who struck the woman. But if there is an ason, the pasuk says v'im ason yiyeh v'natata nefesh tachat nefesh, if there is a death, if there is a fatality, so then that is considered a capital crime of murder or some form of manslaughter. So what is this ason referring to? That's the key question. Some Christian or Catholic theologians have interpreted this as referring to the baby. If there's no ason, if there's no death to the baby, so then there's monetary damages. But im ason, if there is an ason to the baby, to the fetus, then that's viewed as a capital crime, right? Because the fetus is viewed as a human life. And if you interpret the verses in this way, so that leads to a very strict pro-life position, and that's the Catholic position, that abortion is always prohibited. Life begins at conception. And that was the ruling of the Alabama Supreme Court. However, Rashi and Chazal, so they interpret the pasuk differently, and the correct interpretation of the pasuk is that ason is not referring to the fetus. And actually, Rashi goes out of his way. He says, v'lo ya'ason, Ba'isha, with the woman, if there's no fatality. And in Masonia, and if there is a fatality, if there's a death, Rashi says, Ba'isha. So Rashi and Chazal, the rabbis, understand these verses that the fatality that's being referred to is not to the baby, but rather to the mother. And what it's saying is, if there's no fatality, no death to the mother, but there is a loss of the fetus, and that's incredibly sad, and that's difficult, but it's not the loss of human life, and so there's just monetary damages. But in Masonia, if there's a fatality of the woman, that's considered some form of homicide, and that's a capital crime. And according to this understanding, the understanding of Chazal, of the rabbis, so then the fetus has inherent importance and significance, but apparently it's not viewed on the same level as a human life. The Mishnah in Oholot, in source number 6, seems to echo this in talking about a woman who's having difficulty in labor and her life is in grave danger. So the Pasuk says, the Mishnah says rather, that as long as the baby hasn't been born yet, Ha'isha shi'imak shaleled mechadchin et havlad b'me'eha. In other words, you have to terminate the pregnancy, and you have to abort. And the reason why you do this is shechayeh kodmin l'chayev, that her life, the mother's life, takes precedence over the child. However, once yatzaruba, once the child emerges from the woman, and the majority of the child is already out, so then einoginbo, so then we don't kill one or the other, because ain docha nefesh b'nei nefesh. So then, of course, the baby is a full human life at that point. The ruling of the Mishnah is clear that until the baby is born, abortion would be permitted if the fetus is endangering the life of the mother. Here is a case where it's permitted to terminate the pregnancy. What about if it's not a physical danger to the mother, but what about if continuing with the pregnancy or having the child would lead to a nervous breakdown or some kind of mental derangement of the mother? And here, the Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in Eben Ezer, Aleph Samechei, rules that this also, in certain situations, this could also be considered a danger to the life of the mother, even if it's not a physical danger, but if it's a more of a psychological danger. And that in certain situations would enable us to say that the abortion is permitted in that case. And so regarding this question of whether Judaism is pro-life or pro-choice, I think it's certainly fair to say that Judaism is inclined to pro-life and that generally speaking abortion is prohibited. But you see already that it's not strictly pro-life because you already have a couple of cases where abortion would be permitted. And we'll see a couple other cases as well. Now there's two different reasons as to why should the mother's life take precedence over the fetus. So Rashi, you have it in source number 11, if we could jump to there. So Rashi says in source number 11, he says in the small words there, the chol's man shel yatzal aver olam, as long as the baby hasn't emerged into the world, lav nefeshu, it's not considered a human being. And therefore, v'nitan lahargo, you're allowed to kill it, ulahatzal et imo, to save the mother. And the Rambam seems to take a different approach than Rashi. The Rambam in source number 10 famously says that the reason why, if the fetus is endangering the life of the mother, so then the mother's life takes precedence and you're allowed to terminate the pregnancy. The Rambam says in source number 10, he says in the underlines, what does that say? Neishahu kirodef acharei lahorga. Because we view the fetus as the technical concept of a rodef. Let's say if somebody is pursuing rodef, somebody else, to commit mortal harm against that individual, to kill somebody, so then you're allowed to stop the pursuer. That's the concept of a rodef in halacha, right? If somebody is pursuing somebody else to kill somebody, so you're not allowed to just stand there idly by. You have to do something to protect the life of the innocent, and you're allowed to stop the rodef, and whatever it takes to stop the rodef. So the Rambam, interestingly, says that the reason why you're allowed to terminate the pregnancy is because we view the fetus as a rodef. So you could say that what's the debate here between Rashi and the Rambam? According to Rashi, the reason why the mother's life takes precedence is because the fetus is not a human being. According to the Rambam disagrees and says, no, that a fetus, it could be that the Rambam is saying is that really the Rambam views the fetus as a human being. It has life. And maybe it is a human being. But in this case, it's the pregnancy, it's the fetus that's really endangering the mother. And because the fetus is endangering the mother, so we can view the fetus as a rodef, and that's why you're allowed to terminate the pregnancy. In this difficult situation, the mother's life takes precedence. Now, there's two different approaches in terms of why would an abortion generally be prohibited, right? Because the clear implication of that Mishnah is that, okay, if the fetus is endangering the life of the mother, so then you're allowed to terminate the pregnancy. But in general, you're not allowed to terminate the pregnancy. And indeed, in source number 8, it says, and I think, Fred, you were kind of moving there a little bit. My sense is that you have. Let's see if we could hold. We'll get everyone's questions. My time made the Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel says that you're not allowed to terminate a pregnancy. He says, Rabbi Shmuel, Om Ra'afala Ubrim, that non-Jews and Jews are prohibited to harm a fetus and terminate the pregnancy. My time with Rabbi Shmuel, what's the scriptural basis for Rabbi Shmuel? The siv based on the pasuk in Parshat Noach. It says, Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishafech. The literal interpretation of that pasuk is that if you spill the blood of another person, ba'adam damo yishafech, so then a court, the court is entitled to execute you. Now, we're not going to get into that whole issue of the death penalty, but according to the Torah, there are certain things that are deserving of the death penalty. In practice, the Mishnah said that if a court would put somebody to death once every 70 years, it was considered like a murderer's court. In other words, because even though the death penalty is on the books, but it was rarely implemented in practice because there were a lot of different technical requirements. You needed witnesses, you needed warning, there was very, very rigorous cross-examination. But in any case, the pasuk says, the literal interpretation of the pasuk is that if a person commits murder, so then the court can put him to death. However, the rabbis had an additional level of interpretation here. Ezu adam shehu ba'adam. It says, shofech dam ha'adam. Maybe not shofech dam ha'adam kama ba'adam damoy shofech. Maybe it's shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam kama damoy shofech. So that if a person spills the blood of a person within another person, so that's also considered a prohibition. Ezu adam shehu ba'adam. Havi omer ze ubar shebemei imo, that a fetus in the womb of a mother, so that's an example of a human being within another human being, and so it's prohibited to end the life of that fetus. But perhaps what you see from Rashi and the Rambam is it's kind of two different ways to understand a fetus. What do we say? Rashi says, no, the fetus is not considered a human being. Rambam seems to suggest that it is considered close to a human being, but that it's a rodef, and that's why, since it's pursuing the life of the mother, so that's why the mother's life takes precedence. And so this leads us to, there's really two different schools of thought in terms of why is generally abortion prohibited. One school of thought is that it's considered some form of murder. Okay, it's not maybe exactly a murder, but it's some kind of prohibition in the category of ritzicha, of murder. And we'll come back to that in a second, where Moshe Feinstein actually says this. The other way to understand it is that, no, that it's not considered murder, but rather it's some kind of harm either to what? To a potential life, because according to nature, generally speaking, right, so this pregnancy is going to continue, and this baby is going to be born. And so since it's potential life, and it's eventually going to be born, we hope, b'shat tova mislachas, so therefore there's some kind of violation to terminating the pregnancy. And the other approach is to say, and the Chavad Yar argues this, the Chavad Yar is Rav Yar Bakrak, which is that the prohibition is what's called hashchata zera levatala. It's the destruction of human seed. It's not murder of a life. It's not murder of a potential life, but it's some prohibition. And the nature of the prohibition is in the area of kind of a destruction of human entity, of human seed, of Ashkhad Zer Levatala. So that's the prohibition. Just what's the difference between these two opinions? Whether is it because it's some kind of form of murder or it's a destruction of human seed? So one distinction between those two approaches might be, would we call it Yaharag Valyavur? Right? We know that in general, this shouldn't happen, generally speaking, but let's say you'd be required to give up your life to observe a mitzvah. Generally speaking, we say, preserve your life and do the violation. Eat the cheeseburger and save your life. Whatever the case might be. You're just recording the first half, right? Eat the cheeseburger and save your life. Violate Shabbat and save your life. But we all know that there's three different exceptions to that rule. One of them is idolatry, the second one is adultery, and the third one is murder. You're never allowed to commit murder, even if it is to preserve your life. Now, you don't have to, let's say, if God forbid, somebody is drowning, and so that's a tremendous mitzvah to save that person, obviously. But if it means to jump in and give up your own life to save the other person's life, let's say that were the case, then you're not supposed to do that. But to commit murder of somebody to save your own life, so then that you're never allowed to do. That's called Yaharag Valyavur. So would you say that there's Yaharag Valyavur on abortion? So if you say that the nature of the prohibition is that it's some form of murder, so then you would say not only is it a violation to terminate a pregnancy, but it would be something that conceptually, you'd even have to give up your life before being involved in terminating a pregnancy or terminating one's own pregnancy. But if you say that it's not ritzicha, it's not considered murder, but it's some kind of a lower level prohibition, still serious, but it's something that's called hashchatza, zera levatala, like destruction of human seed, then you would say, okay, it's a serious prohibition, but it wouldn't be something that would be classified as yaharag valyavur, to give up your life before doing it. Another difference might be, what about if it's less than 40 days from conception? The Gemara has a statement that before 40 days from conception, that's maya ba'alma. We view the fetus, it's like it's really unformed. I think scientifically, 40 days is a key point where the embryo begins to have human features. So before 40 days, the Gemara has an expression like it's maya ba'alma. So let's say if the pregnancy were to end before 40 days, and again, these are obviously very, very serious, delicate issues, and so we're speaking about them with great reverence. But if it were to happen before 40 days, so the woman, technically speaking, wouldn't have any impurity. You know, when a woman gives birth, so there's some level of tumma. This is really not relevant nowadays for, most areas. But technically speaking, there would not be any tumma. Why? Because it would almost not be considered a miscarriage because it's before 40 days. After 40 days, if a woman were to lose the pregnancy, lose the child, so then there would be considered tumma, that would be considered halachically a miscarriage. The Gemara talks about if a woman who's the daughter of a Kohen marries a Yisrael, and if they get divorced, if they have a child, so then she can no longer eat truma because, yes, she was the daughter of a Kohen, but she married a Yisrael, so once they have a child, she can no longer eat truma. Truma is reserved only for Kohanim. If they get divorced and she doesn't have a child, so then she can go back to her family, and she can eat truma. Because really, after all, she is the daughter of a Kohen. She got married to Yisrael, but they got divorced and they didn't have a child. What happens if they're married a couple of weeks and you don't know, right, or whatever the situation might be, you don't know, maybe she's pregnant. So the Gemara has a statement, again, to teach this idea that before 40 days, it's viewed as, it's not viewed as a fetus, maya ba'alma, it's viewed as water. I mean, I think that's kind of like an exaggeration to make a point that it's not considered a fetus. So the Gemara says if they were just married for 2 weeks, so then for sure, again, but and then they got divorced. So for sure she can eat truma at least until 40 days. Because until 40 days, whatever embryo might be, it doesn't have the status of a human being. So do we apply this concept to abortion? Meaning, so the Gemara is talking about tuma, is talking about truma. What about terminating a pregnancy? So the Sri Deyesh, Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, says if the doctors determine that there's some deformity with this baby, and a serious deformity, and it's and some serious problem with this child, so the Sri Deyesh ruled that before 40 days, you would be allowed to do an abortion. Some poskim say, let's say, God forbid, in case of rape or incest, before 40 days, then that would be a situation where it's permitted to do an abortion, take the day after pill or whatever it might be to terminate the pregnancy. And poskim, rabbinic authorities do rule in that fashion. Very often in those terrible situations, all these situations are, of course, painful to talk about. But in a case of, let's say, rape, before 40 days, based on that Gemara, that you would be allowed to terminate the pregnancy in that kind of situation. So how significant is that 40-day marker? So if you say that it's an issue of murder, that the general prohibition of abortion is because it's some kind of affiliate of murder, so then maybe before 40 days would be a difference, right? Because it's not a human being before 40 days. If, however, you say the issue is destruction of human seed, so then you could say, what's the difference if it's before 40 days or after 40 days? So then you would say maybe it'd be the same. Maybe it's a lower level prohibition always because it's not considered murder, but there's less of a reason to distinguish between before 40 days and after 40 days, because either way, terminating the pregnancy is a destruction of the human seed. I'll give you another example of a difference between these two approaches, and that's a Tay-Sachs baby. And this was a debate between Rav Eliezer Waldenberg and Rav Moshe Feinstein. The issue of the Sri Deyesh is source number 12 that I just made reference to. And this debate between Rav Eliezer Waldenberg and Rav Moshe Feinstein, you have in sources 13 and 14. And so the Tzitz Eliezer, let's see, we'll read a little bit inside in Hebrew. I'll translate in English. He says, "V'hinei achareya iyun bedavar." After a lot of analysis regarding a Tay-Sachs baby, which is a terrible, with like a neurological, physiological disorder where the baby dies within usually a couple of years. It's just a very terrible, painful death and situation for parents who have to deal with a Tay-Sachs baby. So the Tzitz Eliezer says, "V'nei acharei in bedavar b'kovid rosh," with great reverence and severity. "B'chol tzadei hanatunim sheh bebaya hamura." I've thought about all the different factors. "Nira lafia nias daiti." It's in my humble opinion, he says, if you go down to the end of the sixth line, last word, "Efshar lahatir hafsakat harayon," it's possible, but the Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, was the chief rabbinic authority for the Shaarei Tzedek Hospital for many, many years. He has many volumes of rabbinic response, so this is a significant rabbinic authority. He passed away, I don't know, maybe, I'm going to guess, 15, 20 years ago. "Efshar lahatir hafsakat harayon ad shiva chadashim." Says it's possible to permit it, to permit the abortion until 7 months. Okay, Alan, this gets into your thing. We're just distinguishing between before 40 days and after 40 days. Could be a serious marker right there. And then after 6 months, where you would say then it's a viable pregnancy, so maybe it has a different status as well, that Tzitz Eliezer permitted an abortion until the 7th month. In other words, through 6 months. In a situation where the termination of the pregnancy won't cause, won't endanger the life of the mother. However, Mishiva Chadashim Vahala Hadavar Kaved Yoter Chamor, so then it's more serious from 7 months and on, and then he says it would be prohibited. And Rav Moshe Feinstein disagrees, and he has here the tshuva in source number 14. He mentions Tesax around 10 lines from the bottom, that even in a situation of Tesax, Rav Moshe felt that it would be prohibited to do an abortion. And Rav Moshe says the reason why I take a stringent position here is because I view it, the nature of the prohibition is what? Is Ritzicha. And if you see the tshuvos, Rav Eliezer and Waldenberg seems to say the issue is the destruction of human seed. That helps lead him to more of a lenient approach on the issue of Eliezer and Waldenberg. And Rav Moshe Feinstein disagrees and takes a more of a stringent approach because he says that this is what he calls Abizrayu Deritzicha. It's kind of like an associated or affiliate prohibition to murder. It's not exactly murder, but it's something akin to murder. And that's what Moshe says. Okay, it's a Tesax child, a terrible thing. But what gives you the right to do an abortion if that's considered something similar to Ritzicha? I just wanted to get a couple of more thoughts before getting your questions and comments, which is that, okay, so basically you have two different approaches. Is it Ritzicha? Is it murder? Is it considered destruction of human seed? With three differences, is it something that we would call Yahar Valyavar, you have to give up your life before violating it? Number two, how much will we say that there's a difference between before 40 days and after 40 days? And number three is this case of the Tesax baby, debate between the Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Moshe Feinstein. And this could kind of go into the Rashi and the Rambam that we said before, which is, okay, why, if indeed the baby is endangering the life of the mother, why does the mother's life take precedence? Because the Mishnah is clear that the mother's life takes precedence. So one interpretation was because the baby is not a human being. And the other interpretation of the Rambam was that the baby is a human being, sounds like, or close to human being, but the baby is a rodef, is a pursuer of the mother. Now, the general understanding is that the baby that in utero is not a human being. And that's why the mother's life takes precedence. And that's why the psukim in Parsha Mishpatim, we said, right, that if there's a loss of life to the baby, to the fetus, so it's not considered a capital crime. So that's the general understanding, which is that the fetus is not considered, doesn't have the status of a human being. However, the halacha is that, let's say, if we all know that you have to violate Shabbos to save a human being. It's a famous story of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, where he told one of his children that there was somebody who was deathly ill, and they needed to turn on the light on Shabbat, which is usually, of course, a prohibition, but they needed to turn on the light to treat that critically ill individual, and the child was kind of hesitating because it's Shabbos. And Rav Chaim said, "You think you're being stringent on the mitzvah of Shabbos, you're really being lenient on the mitzvah to save another person's life, because saving another person's life, that's pekuach nefesh, and that overrides the mitzvah of Shabbos." That halacha that you're allowed to violate Shabbos to save a life is true even by a fetus. So a lot of the authorities kind of grapple with this. Wait a second. If you look at the sources, generally speaking, you get the sense that the fetus is not a human being, and that's why the mother's life takes precedence. That's why when there's two people fighting and they inadvertently strike the pregnant woman and the baby is lost, it's not considered, right? It's considered lo yason. It's not considered a human fatality, and it's not considered a capital crime. And generally speaking, that's why you might have some leniencies. You might have some permitted cases of an abortion. But wait a second. So then why are you allowed to violate Shabbat? So what some poskim say is that okay, this fetus is not considered a human being, but it's a potential human being. And you know, assuming things move along in the way that we're hoping, right? And the baby naturally develops over the course of the pregnancy. So then this fetus will develop into a human being, will be a beautiful baby, mazel tov. And so because of the fact that this fetus might not be a nefesh now, but it's a potential nefesh, that's why you're allowed to violate Shabbat. And that's in a certain sense what kind of gives significance. It's a potential human being. And that's something that has to be taken really seriously. So if we try to talk about, is Judaism pro-life, pro-choice? And I want to get your thoughts and questions. It's interesting that I think a lot of you said, of course, Judaism is pro-life. It turns out that really it's hard to neatly categorize Judaism as one or the other. Because pro-life, strictly pro-life, means you're never allowed to do it. In my research, I don't know about the Christian or Catholic beliefs. I'm trying to get Judaism, knowledge of Judaism. So I don't really know. But from my little research that I did, that according to Catholic scholars, one approach is that it's prohibited always, even if it's endangering the life of the mother. And then I saw that according to the more like liberal or progressive, that if it's endangering the life of the mother, it would be permitted to terminate the pregnancy, but not obligated. Okay, so even there, right, in Judaism, according to halacha, if it's endangering the life of the mother, you must terminate the pregnancy to save the life of the mother. So Judaism is not pro-life, because certainly a strict pro-life means that generally abortion is prohibited, maybe even in a case where it's endangering the life of the mother. And we saw from here that if it's endangering the life of the mother, so then it's permitted. Maybe if it's before 40 days in a case of rape or incest, it would be permitted. Tay-Sachs, according to the Tzitz Eliezer, right? So you can't say that Judaism is pro-life, but of course, Judaism is not pro-choice, that you could just do whatever you want. And that the body is yours, and so that you could that a woman could end any pregnancy. I think it's fair to say that Judaism is inclined to pro-life. And that's why, of course, we very much want this pregnancy to go full term, and for the woman to have this baby. And of course, we take it with great seriousness. Any consideration of maybe terminating the pregnancy. So certainly Judaism is inclined to pro-life, but it's not really exactly pro-life or pro-choice, which I think is interesting in its own right, that halacha is more nuanced. And that's something that we've been developing over the course of the last couple of classes, which is the notion of nuance, that things are often not black on white. And we've been told, you have your opinion, but there may be another opinion, whether it's in the topic of abortion or whether it's in other issues as well. Of course, this concept of listening to the other, but this idea of nuance certainly is true when it comes to the Jewish view of this topic. Yeah, I think and then. Yes, but then let's say case of rape, for example. She has to live with it. So okay. Okay.
The framing, talking about nuances, the framing. That's a question about the very, very basis of the differing interpretations between Judaism and Christianity, all looking back to the same statement.
Yes.
Do you have a sense of why they latch on to a different interpretation?
Of the psukim?
Yeah.
I think it gets into in terms of what I think, what's our view? That's a good question, meaning how did the rabbis come to that interpretation? Either this was their tradition that they always, the tradition over the generations is how to interpret the psukim, or based on their tradition about how to view the fetus. So they said, okay, it must be. And Rashi says, it must be when it says that there's no fatality, so then there's just monetary damages. Oh, it must be no fatality with the with the mother, that's what it's talking about. No, because it says, and if there is a fatality, if there's a loss of life, then that's considered murder. Maybe manslaughter, because he was intending to kill somebody, strike somebody else. He accidentally struck the woman. So it calls that a capital crime. That must be talking about the woman. In other words, it's a good question. I'm not sure. Is it because this is where they understood the psukim, or because of their understanding of the halacha about the fetus? So it must be when it says that there's an asun here, you treat that as a capital crime. It must be that it's talking about the loss of life of the mother, because the loss of life of the fetus, that's not considered a capital crime. Got to get Fred has a okay. I thought you were. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Alan.
Towards the beginning, you mentioned mental anguish, the mother's mental anguish.
Right.
How is that determined? Who determines it? Is there a rabbinical court, or,
Yeah, you usually follow the doctors. Rav Soloveitchik would say often, let's say, with the issues relating to Israel. Let's say, the very difficult question of redeeming a hostage. Of course, a very relevant issue. We're praying every single day for the release, that all the hostages, Achim and Israel, should be brought home now. So how much are we willing to give for that? How many prisoners are released? And let's say, the Mishnah says if there's a ransom that's exorbitant, so even though there's a big, big mitzvah to free a captive, but if it is an exorbitant ransom, so then you might not be supposed to, then maybe you shouldn't do it. So who makes that decision? So you could make an argument that that's the political and military officials in Israel in terms of the security of Israel. Rav Soloveitchik felt in terms of giving away land for peace. Of course, that seems like a distant discussion. But at least on conceptual grounds, Rav Soloveitchik felt that what do rabbis know about this issue? Rabbis know about some things, but about this, really, you have to ask the political and military leaders in Israel, who were chosen by the people to be the leaders, and they're the ones who make the decisions. Yeah. Yeah, Chuck, are you? Okay, Jerry.
Earlier about the rape or incest.
Yeah.
It only goes to 4 days, or after 4 days?
Good question. I think it's typically that would be before 40 days. It's something that happened. It's a terrible thing that happened.
Right.
And or let's say rape or incest are just like a bad mistake. It's like two teenagers or something like that. And I've had to deal with a question or two over my years of something like that. So it's something that happened, and so it's usually, we're talking about before 40 days. I'm not sure, let's say, if it just was not addressed until after 40 days, it's a good question. Yeah. Yeah, Jerry.
I've read that there's a number of women being pregnant being raped during October 7th.
Wow.
Wow.
That's
well over 40 days at this point. Where does that stand?
Yeah, that's what Chuck was asking. That's a very difficult question. We'd have to. Yeah, it's a very difficult question. Based on my understanding, abortion would only be permitted if it's endangering the life of the mother, gets into the psychological, mental health of the mother, so that gets into maybe a gray issue a little bit. Number two, Tay-Sachs, we discussed, or a serious deformity in the child. And number three is before 40 days. Because once you pass 40 days, it's more complicated. But so I don't, that would have to be, that's a serious, serious question. Yeah, Fred.
Well, but I think you just pointed to, as you referenced earlier, that there is the interpretation, I think you said, about Moshe Feinstein. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Talks about mental anguish and mental health.
Yeah. That's right.
Right, so that seems to be the pathway by which you would analyze that exactly.
Exactly. So that could be. That's exactly. And Judah made reference to it. That's exactly right. So that could be the pathway to allow it in this case also, even after 40 days. Now, you might say that if indeed, hopefully we're just giving you a framework of understanding the Jewish view on abortion, pro-life, pro-choice, certainly inclined to pro-life, but it's really not specifically strictly one or the other. So now you might say that in terms of, let's say, legislation on a national level, state level, whatever it might be, you might say, okay, look, if Judaism generally prohibits abortion, yeah, you have certain exceptions. But if Judaism generally prohibits abortion, so you might say that prohibiting abortion is a good thing. Or you might say that the Supreme Court decision in 2022, overturning Roe versus Wade, you know, taking away the constitutional right to an abortion, you might say that that's kind of a good development. So here it's interesting. Here I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that there's certainly problems, and it's problematic that the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. And here's the reason why I think so, because we have to realize that we now have a situation where members of a Jewish community, depending upon where they're living, it might be permitted according to halacha to have an abortion, but according to federal law or according to the state law, it might be forbidden for them to do it. So they may be legally restricted to terminate a pregnancy when halacha allows it. So on this issue, I think we're better served to have maximum flexibility so that every Jew can follow their rabbinic authority depending upon the situation. But secondly, it's interesting that Rav Moshe Feinstein, who took a very strict approach in the area of abortion, you saw that, it was him versus Rav Elazar Waldenberg on the question of a Tay-Sachs baby, and Rav Moshe was took a stringent approach. Rav Moshe was vocal that he opposed legislation prohibiting abortion. And Rav Moshe understood the importance in terms of this issue of church and state divide. He understood the importance of protecting religious liberties in America, because as Rabbi Jeremy Weider of Yeshiva University explains, he said that even if particular legislation might coincide with what the halacha says, where again we said that not necessarily, because in this case it could be, and it might even be already today, where in certain states you're not allowed to do an abortion when halacha allows it. So that's not a good situation. But number two, even if a particular piece of legislation would coincide with Jewish law, okay, so that'll be true in this case. But that opens the door for other legislation that will be against halacha. Right? Because then the next piece of legislation might interfere with religious practice. So in my view, the goal of our American Jewish community as a minority religion, we have practices where some might find it objectionable, like shechita, like slaughter, like Erev, like Bris Milah. So if we have these practices, it's to our benefit to not impose our moral standards on others, because then that could lead to maybe winning that battle, but then we could lose the war and we could lose battles over issues that are important to us. Okay, so, let's say you think, okay, abortion should be prohibited. Okay, so then it'll come out to our side in this case, but then if we're allowing the government to get involved on these kinds of questions, okay, that opens the door for them to get involved on questions perhaps restricting Mila, Shechita, or Erev. And so if we want others to give us the space to live as we wish, so we really should grant others the same space as well. And that's why it's interesting, Rav Moshe Feinstein, even though he took a very strict view of abortion, but he felt that it's to our benefit to have the maximum flexibility, to have the least amount of restrictions on in terms of a federal legal level. And so that's, I think it turns out really that it's a kind of, on these kind of navigating the culture wars, I think someone might say, it's better to prohibit an abortion because that's more the conservative, that's traditional, that's we're pro-life. So it turns out that Jewish law and tradition is much more nuanced than I think a lot of people realize. Yes, even though generally speaking, abortion is prohibited because if it's not a life, it's a potential life. It's destruction of human seed, and so this is something of significance. But there are certain situations, right, where we said that abortion with the gravity of the case, but where abortion would be permitted. That's number one. And number two, while it's nuanced and it's not black on white, even in situations where abortion is prohibited, that doesn't necessarily follow to say, okay, that the law in the country should be that way. right? That, you know, let's, and this is a whole other topic, but let's, you know, let's say, you know, same-sex marriage is a whole, you know, other type of thing. Where Judaism has a position in terms of what's considered marriage, but that doesn't necessarily mean that all the laws in the country have to be exactly like Jewish law. We have our laws and our way of our values, and that doesn't mean we have to impose it to make sure that everyone agrees with our Jewish values, and that the law is, you know, in accordance with our values. That's what Avram says. Avram says, "Ger v'toshav anochi imachem." I'm a stranger and a citizen, because Avram understood, like we understand, which is that we're a part of the country, and there's values in the country that we embrace as our own. But then it's always the case wherever we're living that there's some values that we don't embrace. And they're not our own, right? He's a ger v'toshav. He's a citizen of America. Avram is a citizen of the Chittites, but he's a stranger. We're citizens in America, but we're separate. And so it's actually to our benefit if the government does not get involved in these religious issues, and the least amount of restrictions on abortion is actually, I think, to our benefit. So the overturning of Roe versus Wade, I don't think, is necessarily a good thing, and it actually is you know, it's actually problematic in certain respects. Judaism celebrates life. We should just celebrate smachot and healthy babies and bar and bat mitzvahs and only smachot in good health for us all. Thank you so much.
Weddings.
And then weddings. Yeah, weddings too.